If your knees check the weather before you do, time to check out Joint Relief Institute. Fast, FDA-approved pain relief covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000 as in zero pain.
It is Sunday morning. Top of the morning to y'all. Boy, that was Irish and country. I don't know what I've just done. We're combining things today because it is the first day of summer and it's Father's Day. So we're just going to combine things all day long. I'm Wendy Snyder and Dave Schwann is here. Happy Father's Day to you, if it applies. If it doesn't, we all have fathers,
well,
right?
Yeah, and I think both of us, you and I, remember our fathers. Certainly remembering mine today here.
Yes.
Been gone now over 4 years.
I don't want to start this off with a depresso downer talk, but I am. I was 10 when my father passed away.
You've said this, yes.
Yeah, and I was... Hi, Charlie Romeliotis, by the way.
Hello.
Good morning. You're not a father, are you?
I am not.
That you're aware of? I hate when guys say that, by the way.
But you
have a father?
Yes.
Okay. Well,
happy Father's Day to your dad.
Yes, Peter Romeliotis. Happy Father's Day to him.
Woo! Hi, Peter. Happy Father's Day. And Eli, you're not a father?
I'm not a father as well.
All right, you have one?
I have one. Happy Father's Day to Scott
Berg.
And
happy Father's Day to your dad.
Scott Berg?
Yes, Scott Berg. Happy Father's Day.
And Caitlin is here today, who is an intern. Hi, Caitlin.
Yes, hello.
Thanks for joining us. Do you have a father?
I do, yes. Happy Father's Day to Tom Gajewicz.
Yay! All right, see, this is nice. So Dave Schwann and I are members of the Dead Dads Club. Because I'm just saying it, but I was talking to some of the engineers Friday after I filled in for Bob Surratt, and we have a reel-to-reel machine in Jimmy Mack's studio, and it works, and I'm thinking, you know, we should get rid of it because it really takes up a lot of room.
No.
We're not going to.
No.
One of the engineers, Bill Malone, is like, do not get rid of that.
No.
And then I remembered something, which I shared with them, and I want to share with the listeners. When I was, I don't even know how old I was. A long story, super short. My dad was a juvenile diabetic. I think that's called type 1 these days. He was starting to lose his eyesight, and he kind of was liking reading the Bible towards the end of his life. And he couldn't read anymore. So he asked his sweet little daughter, Wendy, to read the Bible while he recorded me on his reel-to-reel machine. Not the same one we have. This was a smaller portable one. And all I can remember, you guys, was this is before I smoked, so my voice was a little higher then. It was like, he cometh down from the mountain, and are we finished yet? That's all I remember doing. So somewhere in my basement at my sister's house are these tapes. I have got to find them.
Yeah, we need to make that part of the show ASAP.
I mean, I was the original books on tape audiobook person. I really was, reading
the
Bible.
Game.
Yes, and I mean, so he died when I was 10. This had to have been, I was like maybe seven. When do you learn how to read? Seven,
when
eight?
You're about six or seven, I guess, yeah. Read fluently.
Yeah.
You know, you can pick out words a couple of years before that.
But, okay, I had just begun to read. Imagine reading the Bible as, you know, that was my child's golden book, or that instead of Good Night Moon, Wendy reads the Bible, you know? Good golly. But I'm so glad I did that. And on Father's Day, I often think of that. My mom passed away a month after I got married. So without having parents, I have to tell you, I have the greatest in-laws in the world, and I really lucked out with that. So we are heading over to my father-in-law's house today. Along, my mother-in-law will be there as well. We're going to have some takeout barbecue. So happy Father's Day to Jim McInerney, not my husband. That's Jimmy. He's Jimmy. Why do men always name their sons after themselves? I mean, really. And then sometimes men name their kids after themselves, but change the middle name, so then they call the kid the middle name. So why don't you just name them the middle name as the first name? Did I confuse everyone today?
In my family, Greek household, it skips a generation. Oh. So I was named after my grandpa. So it's not like Charlie, I'm going to name my kid Charlie, and then Charlie's going to name another kid Charlie, and then there's a bunch of Charlies. It kind of skips, so you know you're talking about the grandfather or the grandson.
Okay, that makes a little more sense.
Yeah.
There are a lot of Johns in my family, a lot of Jims in Jim's family, my husband's family. So, come on, people, come up with new names. That's all I got to say. WGN Radio is celebrating the best TV dads of all time. There's a listener poll, and Eli, I think we determined that it goes through today.
Yeah, it looks like voting ends tonight.
Okay. So voting for WGN Radio's Best TV Dads of All Time listener poll, as Eli said, goes till the end of Father's Day today. And I don't know who's still in the lead. I know Andy Taylor from the Andy Griffith Show had a healthy lead.
That's what it's still looking like so far.
Really?
I mean, there's still time.
We need to discuss this after the break. We're going to discuss some TV dads. But you still have a chance to vote your favorite TV father figure, WGNRadio.com. And while you're there, enter for a chance to win a Schaefer's Greenhouses gift certificate. So pretty exciting. We'll talk about TV dads coming up, your favorite of all time. We'll do that next here on 720 WGN. You and I. Yes. Correct grammatical English. There are times you use you and me, and Dave Schwann will explain it. I will put the pressure on you.
It's me and you.
Me and you. Yeah, I like it. Just the two of us, Schwanny. It's Wendy Snyder here, and Charlie Romeliotis is here. Eli Burke is producing, and we have Caitlin. I don't remember your last name, to be honest with you. What is it?
It's Gajavich.
All right, I'm never going to be Gajavich. All right, and she is interning with us today. 312-981-7200 is the number to call. We're talking about TV dads. Who's your favorite? I do want to wish Jimmy Mack a happy Father's Day. He's a great dad. We have two boys, Dylan and Michael, and ever since they were born, I'm pretty sure Jim changed more diapers than I did. And he was the only dad I knew who would get a happy meal for the boys, but then make some green beans on the side so they would have some veggies along with the happy meal. So happy Father's Day, Jimmy Mack. And we were talking about people naming their sons after themselves. 540 has texted in, my grandparents, Paul and Betty, had a son and daughter, and they named them Paul and Betty. Doesn't that get confusing? Is that when you have to say number one, number two, junior? Can women be juniors? That is the question of the day.
Ah! That is a good question.
I don't think so. I don't think they can be. All right. Favorite television dads. You can go to WGNRadio.com. Some of these, oh boy, like really, Tony Soprano is on here from The Sopranos. Was he a good dad? I guess he, I don't know. He loved his, Anthony Jr. Anthony! Walter White, Breaking Bad. Was he a good dad?
Fun to watch.
Well, okay.
I don't know if that counts, but.
Yeah, fun to watch and a great dad, kind of, like Mike Brady, the Brady Bunch. Good dad. And did we ever figure out how they both became widowed? Was that ever mentioned on the Brady Bunch? Because I know Mike Brady lost his wife, had his three boys, and I'm pretty sure, yeah, Carol Brady lost her husband too, and they found love together, and all of a sudden they were in a bingo game on TV with all the different squares. Marty Bird from Ozark. If you watched Ozark, I kind of almost think he was a good dad. He did some shady things, but he protected his kids. He was very calm about everything. Jason Bateman is awesome. And he was a dad, in Arrested Development too. Michael Bluth. Was he a good dad? I don't think so. Andy, Taylor from the Andy Griffith Show. What are your thoughts about that, Schwanny? Do you think he was a good dad?
I think he was a great dad.
Now, he lost his wife too. And
they never really explained
right.
it. But, you know, apparently Opie was an infant or a very, very young boy, you know, when it happened. But it was never, ever explained. Every once in a while you'd have a reference to Ma.
Oh,
know,
yeah, yeah.
But very, very seldom.
Well, when you have Aunt B, who is taking
yes.
care of everything, you know, the Ma
she was
is
definitely
not,
in control.
Yeah, totally. George Jetson? Really?
And Fred Flintstone,
yeah.
too.
Yeah, actually, someone just texted about that. Homer Simpson is very underrated, especially when it comes to his love for the daughters, Lisa and Maggie. I am not so sure about other things.
I think they meant to say Bart.
Oh.
Just some autocorrect.
Yeah. Should I say what it really says? It says, Homer Simpson is very underrated, especially when it comes to his love for his daughters, Lisa and Maggie. I'm not so sure about porn. I think they did
yeah.
mean Bart.
I hope so.
Yeah. If not, I didn't... Was Homer real? Homer was more interested in food than he was in porn, if we're being honest. The father that played on Father Knows Best. What was his character name? I liked Father Knows Best.
It was the character's name. I think it was Jim Anderson.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Played by...
Robert Young.
Yes.
Played Marcus Welby
right.
later on.
Right, thank you. Some of these... Everybody Loves Raymond. Frank Barone. He was a terrible dad. He was not very good to his kids. Howard Cunningham from Happy Days was a great dad. Eli, did you tell me what your favorite dad was from TV?
Last week we talked about this off air, but uh-huh. I wrote one of my college essays I wrote when I was in high school was about who my dream roommate would be. And I said my dream roommate would be Phil Dunphy from Modern Family. He and I would have just had like a great freshman year together.
I think he's a great dad. You know, it is hard to figure out who's the best. I'm just looking at some of these. Ozzie Nelson, that's a little before my time. The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet. I didn't watch that show that often. Ray Barone from Everybody Loves Raymond, which is Ray Romano. I don't know. I liked Red Foreman from that 70s show. He didn't put up with any crap. He sure didn't. And then Peter Griffin from Family Guy. That is one show I just never got into. I don't know why. Simpsons, awesome. Family Guy, not so much. Ward Cleaver, Leave It to Beaver. See, how do you judge a good dad? Because back then, Ward would come home from work, and June would hand him a cocktail and the newspaper, and he would sit in his easy chair, and he would just sit there and kind of chill after a long day at work while she wore the beautiful apron and prepared dinner for Beav and Wally and her husband. I mean, is that a good dad?
Well, can I suggest Murray Goldberg then?
He always explained to Beaver when he got in trouble as to, you know, what to do, how to avoid getting back into trouble.
Yeah, you know, I guess
set him straight on things.
He had some advice. Eli, what were you saying?
I was going to say, it sounds just like Murray Goldberg if you were to make it more modern. In the Goldbergs TV show, like the Jeff Garland's character
yeah.
would walk right into the room, take his pants off, sit on the couch, and then I guess like that was very similar to how my dad was at home. So
did he take his pants off?
Oh, yeah.
Fathers, like... please, just could you go up to your bedroom and put shorts on or something? Don't just drop trowel when you walk in the house. We don't want to see. And Jeff Garland always had the tidy whities as well.
Luckily, there was a little more decency in my household than that. But.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, go ahead and vote. It goes on. There's a huge list of people.
I did see Danny Tanner on there from Full House. I feel like that's a good one. I was a Full House fan growing up.
Yeah. And you know who else is on here? Jesse Katsopoulos. Uncle Jesse is
That's
on
right.
here. He was an uncle. I mean, he wasn't I guess he had a baby at the very end of the episode. I sort of watched that show. I can't think of the best dads. I'm looking through all these. Ted Lasso. I forgot Ted Lasso was a dad. He was a pretty sweet dad. He loved his kid. And I think Ted Lasso's coming back, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, they're getting season 4.
Oh, yeah. That's right. And we'll talk to Alex Zalbin later on this morning about TV. We're going to talk about... I have a wonderful thing I'm going to share as we cover the history of iconic brands as we celebrate 250 years of America. Shawnee, I think we're going to have some fun with that today. Also, Pride Fest is going on. This is day number 2, and I hope the rain holds off a little bit because there's a lot going on for Pride Fest. It's the 25th annual Chicago Pride Fest. We'll talk to someone about that. There's music. There's food. There is fun, and we have, you know what? We are going to talk about This Week in Health, or Wendy's Hypochondriac Corner, as I like to call it. So if you have any questions for the good doctor, Dr. Santina Wheat, 312-981-7200 is the number to call, and we've got Dave Schwann's news coming up next here on 720 WGN. And time now for Shawnee's far-flung forecast.
Well, thank you very much, Wendy, and good morning, everyone. Get out your compasses, protractors, and newfangled devices because we head west, and actually northwest, into Spokane, Washington today. Spokane has a population of, let's see. It's 228,989. It's in the western, southwestern portion of the state of Washington. And quite an amazing area there in kind of a desert region. It's east of the Cascade Mountains. And not all that far at all from the Idaho border as well. But we mentioned Spokane, Washington, because they more or less take pride in the fact that Spokane is the home of a woman named Sonora Smart Dodd, who is the organizer of Father's Day. She was 16 years old when her mother died, and her father was left as a single father, but raising several children as well. Interesting story about him, by the way. He was born in Arkansas and fought for the Confederacy in the Civil War. He was taken prisoner, then joined the Union troops to fight the Confederacy. But it ain't...
Wow.
Well, it was a way of him getting out of the prisoner of war camp. He said, okay, I'll go with you guys.
And, smart man.
And he, you know, he was probably saved his life. Who knows? But they ended up moving to Spokane, Washington. And early in the 20th century, his daughter, Sonora, was in church hearing a sermon about a newly established holiday called Mother's Day. Well, she thought, if mothers can be honored, we can honor fathers, too. And I would love to do that for my dad. Well, it caught on, and several years later, then-President Woodrow Wilson sent her a telegraph saying, this is a wonderful idea, and we should, continue this. Pretty soon, you had national exposure. And then finally, in 1972, President Richard Nixon signed into law or a proclamation that the third Sunday in June would indeed be Father's Day. But we owe this to Sonora Smart Dodd of Spokane, Washington, and they're having a warm day there today. It's 62 already now, and they'll have a high of 85.
Well, thank you so much. I am so glad I didn't talk about that earlier when we opened the show to talk about Father's Day. And the only reason I didn't, Shawnee, is because I didn't know how to pronounce Spokane.
Oh.
I'm like, Spokane? No.
You weren't sure. Okay.
Yeah,
but it is Spokane. Spokane,
yeah.
Washington.
Oh,
yes.
That would have been terrible because you put so much thought into your far-flung forecast. So you and I have to talk to each other about what it's going to be, I think, in the future.
We've got a couple good ones coming up because we're getting so close now to the 4th of July.
Oh, all
next
right.
Week, especially the week after.
I will check with you in the morning.
Okay.
Official flower, by the way, of Father's Day, which I didn't know there was one.
I didn't either. What's
it's
that?
It's the rose.
Tradition, for Father's Day.
Yes, tradition dictates wearing a red rose if your father is living and a white rose
if your
in
father
his
has
memory.
Passed away yeah. In his memory.
So, Shawnee, you and I will wear a white rose.
We'll get some
rose
white roses,
today.
Yes.
Love it. Thank you so much. And we will Check out This Week in Health. Dr. Santina Wheat will join us next. 312-981-7200 if you have any ailments or questions for the good doctor. It's Wendy Snyder here with you. This Week in Health, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. And joining us once again, Dr. Santina Wheat, Program Director, McGaw Northwestern Family Medicine Residency at Del Nor Hospital. Happy Father's Day to your family, Dr. Wheat.
Thank you, and to everyone out there as well.
Thank you, thank you. All right, let's get right into this. I had been hearing about ivermectin when COVID-19 was around. It's an animal medication that gets rid of, what, parasites?
You've got it. And humans can use it to get rid of parasites, too, primarily worms. But it does not help against COVID and some of the other things that people are wondering if it would help against lately.
Well, now I'm reading that cancer patients are choosing ivermectin over chemotherapy.
Yeah, and this is really concerning because the chemotherapy is really what is shown to help treat the cancer. There's some ideas that maybe ivermectin can help with antibody production and helping with your white blood cell count because of animal models, but there's been no real studies that have proven that it can be helpful in treating cancer, and so absolutely do not recommend it, really only using it for its intended use, which, like I said, is to get rid of worms.
There is so much misinformation on the internet, and I mean, really, this is your health you're dealing with, people. So if you come across something, just run it past your doctor. That's what we try to do here on Sunday mornings. We ask you, Dr. Wheat, because some of this stuff is just not healthy.
That's absolutely true. Absolutely bring these questions to your physician. We want to make sure that you feel comfortable with your care and to be able to give you the best information possible. And, of course, there's things that we won't know, but most of us are happy to look it up and make sure that you're getting the best information possible.
All right. Well, so you've heard it here, people. Talk to your doctor, and ivermectin is a very good dewormer. So if you have a parasite, you can perhaps bring that up to your doctor. Turning to GLP-1 medications, which, I'm sorry, I feel like a broken record, but it turns out every week it seems there's new information about why it's not only good for losing weight, but now it may improve male fertility?
Yeah, and I'm not exactly sure why this is. There seems to be a couple of different reasons. Losing weight in itself can help male fertility because it realigns some of the hormones that are good for men's health. It decreases the estrogen from the fat and allows that to mean that there's more testosterone. But there's potentially some evidence that it has another action also, and I don't really know what that is, but it's exciting to know that there's just yet another benefit from this class of drugs that has really been shown to help so much. And fertility just impacts so many people. We often talk about the women's issues with fertility, but men play a role as well, and so this is really important news.
And a couple weeks ago, I think we talked about GLP-1 having some benefit for treating certain types of cancer. Is this going to turn out to be like the magical drug for everyone in the universe?
I mean, I do think that the fact that obesity impacts health in so many ways, that the fact that we're altering the hormones that help prevent obesity and helps treat obesity really is leading to so many things. It feels like a great drug thus far. Absolutely not perfect for everyone, but it definitely is this medication or this class of medications that seems to have so much good. So I'm glad it's something that we're learning more about every day.
And we had spoken about this before. This does seem to be something that would be an ongoing medication. I know some people that have done the rounds of Ozempic a couple of times, gone off it, put weight back on, and now a third time attempting it and is thinking maybe she will microdose GLP-1 after she reaches her goal weight. Is there any benefit to that? Has that shown to be helpful or successful?
You know, I do hear a lot of anecdotal comments about the microdosing of the GLP-1. It needs more information behind it, but it does seem real that once you've reached your goal weight, you can stay at a steady state and have a lesser dose than what we think of as the doses that you need for the actual weight loss. So I still think we need to learn more information, but I do think there's something to staying on this for long term at smaller doses once you're where you need to be for your health.
And I want to put to rest some disputes as well that I've heard. It's a new thing. We don't know how it's going to be. And I brought this up to you. It may have been last week. This has been out and about for, you said, 20 years, because it started with really being beneficial to diabetics.
Absolutely. We've had types of GLP-1s, though not the ones that we've been talking about in the news so much, for a while. And so, yes, we're talking about this as a new thing because these specific drugs are doing a better job than some of the previous ones. But this class of medications has been around for a while in helping diabetics get their diabetes under control. And so this is really, it has long information. We know that it works well. We just need to learn more about it to see all of the benefits.
Again, discuss with your own personal doctor if you have any questions. In the meantime, we have Dr. Santina Weitz, Program Director, McGaw Northwestern Family Residency at Del Nor Hospital. We'll take a quick break and then back with more health topics here on 720 WGN. Happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. I'm Wendy Snyder, and we are talking to Dr. Santina Wheat. She's Program Director at McGaw Northwestern Family Medicine Residency at Del Nor Hospital. This week in health, I came across this flesh-eating bacteria. It's back. We all know I'm a hypochondriac. This is a teenager went swimming in a Florida park, and is this something I need to be afraid of now? And if I go swimming at a beach this summer,
I don't think it's something that you have to put on the must worry about list always. I do think that if you go swimming in open waters, it really looks like based on where it's showing up on the coast, particularly further south, to make sure that you don't have any major open wounds. And if you do, just pay attention to them. Make sure you rinse off afterwards, that you clean everything. And if you feel like something is wrong, that's a reason to go get seen quickly.
And it would just, like, say you have a skinned knee or something. That's not really going through several layers of skin. But what should you be looking out for if you go swimming in open water and you have an open wound? Obviously, infection, red, warm. What else should you be looking for before you freak out and say, I have flesh-eating bacteria?
All of those things that you said, and that it moves quickly.
Really?
In a day or so, all of a sudden, it looks like the redness is spreading. We also worry about fever and chills, signs that the infection is in the rest of your system. But what we really worry about with this is that it moves very quickly.
And this has been around before, and it seems like it gets under control. It's just bacteria, perhaps maybe warm waters build up this bacteria, and then it enters your body through an open wound. Is that pretty much it?
That's pretty much it. And we do sometimes see more of it when there's been major weather things, and then we see it move. And so that's when it tends to get the headlines, when it's seen in a new place or when somebody is impacted by it. But yes, it's just bacteria that's getting into a wound. It's just a very aggressive form of bacteria.
And can you get it, you know, some people, especially little kids, you try to tell them, don't put lake water in your mouth, but sometimes they do that. Can you get it that way?
I generally have not heard of cases of it happening that way. But if you feel like there's something wrong with your kid, if they feel off, it's absolutely a reason to go get seen. But most often, like I said, it's an open wound, and it's something that you can observe happening.
All right, and speaking of going to the beach, we have all been using sunscreen. I didn't as a kid. I used baby oil, and that's why a lot of us in the boomer category are having skin issues now because we didn't use it. But there's a new ingredient that's been approved to use in sunscreen.
Yeah, this was new to me. It's exciting to have yet another way to protect ourselves against skin cancer. There's different parts of sunscreen that block the different rays that are coming in. And so this is something that is just another option for doing that. The keys to this will still be to apply sunscreen multiple times. Most people forget to reapply often enough. And recently I've actually heard dermatologists say that while sunscreen is great, it's even better to make sure you're using clothing that deflects the sun and cover areas where you can. So the UV swimsuits or the UV hats as well are still our better option for making sure that we are protected from the sun. But this new ingredient is safe for us and doesn't cause harm. And it's been approved in other countries for a while.
That's great. You do forget to apply it. Now I'm so bad about myself. I was so great with my kids when they were little. I would slather them up all the time. What about the spray stuff? Is that effective? I don't feel it covers you as well as a lotion, but it's way easier to put on.
I hear that. But yes, there's definitely concerns that with the spray that you don't get as good of coverage, that you can't always see where it is. And then also that you might be inhaling it. So it's still ideal if you can use the lotion. Sometimes if you can use the ones, at least for kids, that you can see that you've reached all of the areas that then sort of rub in. And then again, like I said, the UV clothing is often your best bet because you don't have to remember to reapply.
Yeah, and I've seen a lot of those at beaches where people have like the swim shirts on. It's cool. Mm-hmm. They look great.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and this may gross people out on this Sunday morning, but I found this article where if you have a roommate, and that could include family members, but say you're living with your best friend, you may be sharing more than just outfits. You're sharing your germs as well, right?
That's absolutely right. We still have to learn more about the microbiome, but this is all about the microbiome. But it makes sense. If you are cooking together and sharing meals together, then it would make sense that you have some of the same bacteria. If you're sharing countertops and bathrooms, then it does make sense that you're exposed to the same things. And so we are seeing that roommates share a good proportion of the same microbiomes. It was about 25%. And if you are romantic partners, then that number goes up and it's closer to 50%. And so it definitely seems that we are sharing similar bacteria in households.
It's not necessarily bad, though, is it?
Oh, no, not at all. This is not saying that you're sharing dangerous bacteria. It just means that you have the same good bacteria in your gut. And so it's just showing that it's just an example to me that it matters what we're doing in our homes and that it makes sense that you would have similar bacteria. And when there are the bad bacteria out there, the bad viruses, why it spreads so quickly through homes.
That's it. I'm putting a baggie over my toothbrush to protect it. All right. Well, Dr. Wheat, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. And thanks for calming our minds on a lot of these health issues in the news. We appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, you too, and happy Father's Day again to everyone who identifies as a father.
It's Wendy Snyder here with you. Happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. We here at WGN are celebrating America's 250th birthday this year, and during this Sunday show, I like to share some of the iconic brands that have been around almost as long as our country. Today, we're focusing on a Chicago company. And let's start at the beginning. William Wrigley Jr., the founder of Wrigley Spearmint Gum, 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 Wrigley Spearmint Gum. There are so many fun Wrigley commercials out there. We were having a blast looking at them. Anyway, so William Wrigley Jr., started out working in his father's soap factory in Philadelphia around 1870. After learning the ins and outs of the business, Wrigley began selling soap for his father in Philadelphia. He was only 18 years old. Then, in 1891, at the age of 29, Wrigley decided to set out on his own. And where did he move? He came right here, right to Chicago, where he continued selling his father's soap. Now, Wrigley came up with a plan to improve his sales and added free cans of baking powder if businesses would stock his father's soap. Soon, the baking powder became more popular than the soap he was selling. So he made the wise decision to change directions and started selling baking powder instead. Who buys baking powder? Unless you're a chef or something. In 1892, Wrigley began to use a similar incentive to sell his baking powder. He would include two packages of gum for free with each can of baking powder. The chewing gum soon became more popular than the baking powder. He then shifted his business focus again and began selling only gum. His first two brands were called Lotta Gum and Vassar. I did not know this.
Vassar?
Yeah, and Lotta Gum. Wrigley used as much advertising as he could to let consumers know about his gum in what was a very competitive chewing gum market. Wrigley introduced Juicy Fruit and Wrigley Spearmint Gum a year later in 1893. These brands started his successful chewing gum business, Juicy Fruit and Wrigley Spearmint Gum. Wrigley pushed the Spearmint brand with more advertising, spending, back in 1907, he spent $284,000. That was a huge amount back then.
It sure was. That's got to be a couple million
yeah,
today.
Yeah, easy.
Yeah.
Wrigley Spearmint was the top-selling gum in the United States in 1910. Wrigley's company became the largest gum manufacturer in the world. And then Wrigley diversified his massive wealth by investing in real estate. Purchased the iconic Wrigley Building in Chicago, bought the Cubs, ever hear of them, which led to the creation of Wrigley Field. Now, William Wrigley Jr. died in 1932. Today, the Wrigley Company is owned by Mars Incorporated, continues a legacy as one of the most successful confectionery stories in the world. And I have a bunch of fun facts about Wrigley Gum. First of all, during World War II, Wrigley gum was included in care packages that were sent to American soldiers overseas. At the same time, the company was adapting to offer sugar-free Orbit gum to consumers as sugar was being rationed. Do you remember Orbit gum, Schwani? I do.
Yeah, Orbit? I think so, yeah.
I think it's still out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. In 1915... Wrigley mailed a free pack of Wrigley's gum to every single person listed in the U.S. telephone directory, reaching over 1.5 million addresses. Now that is a businessman. And then, we know about spearmint gum. In fact, we have a, Eli, do we have another spearmint gum? Oh, you know, we'll play that next. I love these old commercials we came about. But now Juicy Fruit, there's a big mystery of the flavor. Wrigley Spearmint flavor is straightforward.
Do you want the Juicy Fruit song?
Yeah. This is groovy. This has Partridge Family written all over it, I think.
Boy, like far out.
Yeah, groovy, man. So the flavor of Juicy Fruit gum has been a guarded company secret. Chemists believe the primary ingredient is isoamyl acetate. It's a compound that naturally occurs in bananas and is sometimes referred to as banana oil or essence of pear. Isoamyl acetate. Because it doesn't taste like...
Watch your language.
Yes, I'm sorry. Because it doesn't taste like just one thing... The Wrigley Company describes it as a blend of lemon, orange, pineapple, and banana scents, and many modern fans claim the gum smells like jackfruit, which also contains isoamyl acetate. Sorry, I have to be careful.
I love juicy fruit. Now I want some. I haven't had some in years.
I know, but. And I love it as well, and it has it helped me quit smoking. And we're going to take a quick break,
yeah.
And we're going to talk more Wrigley gum because.
Again, I have a question after the break about Wrigley gum.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Because I'm a big Juicy Fruit fan, and we will discuss all their flavors, and maybe the Doublemint Twins will come up and visit us.
Okay,
I'm not sure.
There you go. Yep, that's what you read my mind.
All right, we'll continue talking next here on 720 WGN. Oh, refresh your taste with WGN Radio.
I wish everyone could see Schwani right now.
Are you rocking out?
The Schwani dance.
The biggest smile I've ever seen.
Life was so wholesome when Wrigley Spearmint Gum came out back in 1893. We are celebrating America's 250th birthday. And what is this called online?
Spirit of America is where you can find it.
WGNradio.com. And look up Spirit of America. All the shows are featuring different ways that we are celebrating America's 250th. Someone has texted in, and they texted, 815 texted in a picture and says, in my purse right now, and it's a picture of Orbit gum that is
okay.
In their purse.
Yeah. Yeah, Eli, you have to understand, when you play these jingles, I feel young again.
So I have to
start dancing.
I take requests, so send me some suggestions throughout the week, and I'll make it happen for you.
All right, I will.
I love these old commercials. 630 said French children used to ask U.S. soldiers for chewing gum because Wrigley sent them to soldiers. 847, Wendy, when I was little, my mom chewed Doublemint. When we asked for a piece, she always took one and split it in half. I did the same to my kids.
We had Doublemint all the time at home.
That was our biggest one that we had, too. And I still am so mad at my brother, Chris, who's older than I am. We were in church one time, and he handed me a piece of Doublemint gum, and he said, do you have any fillings? And I said, yes. And he said, this is a really cool thing to do. Take the foil off the gum, fold it into a little square, and then bite down really hard where the filling is. It's the coolest thing. And I did it and yelped in the middle of church.
I was going to say that.
Oh, my God.
That doesn't, the fillings don't like that.
No, and those were metal fillings.
And I learned that, too. Yeah,
back
so
then.
Were mine.
Yeah.
Right. This is why I now have crowns and implants. Rather than the real teeth.
Yes. Now, did you have a Doublemint question?
Yeah, I was wondering, you've got all these great old jingles here. Did you have the one that went, double your pleasure, double your fun with Doublemint, Doublemint, Doublemint gum?
I bet Eli's looking for it as we speak.
I'm looking for it.
The Doublemint Twins.
The Doublemint Twins.
There were different versions of the twins throughout the years. And they got more hip as, you know, they became, as it got closer to the 80s and stuff.
Is this right?
Maybe a little newer.
Well, here's the chorus.
Yeah, this is a newer version.
This one's from 1987.
Oh, no, I'm going back 20 years before
that.
Yeah,
go 70s.
I'll get working.
All right.
Nice try.
How, like, just soothing all the gum commercials were. Seriously, it's just...
Well, they, you know, the effort was to make you relax and feel good and enjoy it.
I guess. So classic Wrigley's flavors. Oh, I just very quickly want to tell my Juicy Fruit story. When I have tried to quit smoking like 6 times, and this time it's worked for the last 6 years. I haven't had a cigarette, although I dream about them and would have one right now if I did. And when I quit, I use this contraption called the harmless cigarette. They're not paying me. I paid for it myself. There's no nicotine, no tobacco, no heat, no vape, no nothing. It's basically a pretend cigarette. And there's a little weight in there. And when you draw on it, like to inhale, that little weight moves and it feels like you're kind of drawing on a cigarette. So I would use the harmless cigarette and orange Nicorette gum. And whenever I had the urge for a smoke, I would take a drag on this harmless cigarette, pop in a piece of the orange Nicorette gum, and then ultimately it tasted so much like Juicy Fruit that I just got rid of the Nicorette gum and would do Juicy Fruit gum with the harmless cigarette, and I have not smoked in 6 years.
That is commendable. I salute you.
Well, thank you.
I mean it. No, congratulations. That is awesome.
Yeah. Well, you know, and people honestly just keep trying. So Juicy Fruit has been wonderful for me. Then there's Wrigley's Spearmint and Double Mint. Double. Yeah.
You didn't see the video, but that was honestly horrifying for my life.
All right. Oh, really? Yeah, well, the twins, man. That's what it is. Yeah, the famous double-strength refreshing mint flavor. And then Big Red was their bold, spicy cinnamon gum.
Big Red? Yeah, I remember that.
And Winter Fresh, I don't remember. A cool, crisp, wintergreen mint flavor. I don't remember Wrigley's Winter Fresh. But they still have Orbit. That's sugar-free. Peppermint, spearmint, bubble mint, sweet mint. And Extra sugar-free gum. They have Polar Ice, Spearmint, Peppermint, and Bubble Gum.
My go-to.
Oh, they do have... Okay, I was about to ask. I don't recall a Wrigley's gum being a bubble gum, like Bazooka bubble gum.
Oh, just wait. Just wait. They had Eclipse gum, which I love. Eclipse is really strong. Mm-hmm. They have Polar Ice, Spearmint, Peppermint, and Winter Frost. And then Wrigley's put out Hubba Bubba Bubble Gum. They did the Hubba Bubba. I said it wrong. Hubba Bubba, the outrageous original classic bubblegum flavor, strawberry watermelon, cherry lemonade, and then they did the Hubba Bubba tape, which was original and sour blue raspberry rolls of gum. I don't know if Eli, you, or Charlie ever had the rolls of gum.
That was my favorite.
Okay.
That was the pink one, right? Where you can blow really big bubbles with.
And you would just try to eat as much of it as you could all at once.
Yep, exactly.
Defeat the purpose of the tape. Just.
Yes. And the Hubba Bubba definitely kept its flavor way more than Bazooka. I love to this day, I love Bazooka bubble gum. It's so hard, and then you get it soft, but it loses its flavor in like 5 minutes. Hubba Bubba lasts a double... Hubba Bubba time. I'm done with that. All right. So the Double Mint Twins, Mary Vandeveld and I said something exactly at the same time, and it was from the past, and we said at the same time, boy, it's like we're the Double Mint Twins. So I don't know if anybody remembered that back in the day, but the Double Mint Twins were very popular, and they should bring them back, I think. So we celebrate 250 years. And the first flavors of Wrigley gum were spearmint and Juicy Fruit, and they were brought forth in Chicago, Illinois in 1893. Going back in time for that. We've got our television man, Alex Zalbin. It's Wendy Snyder here with you on a Sunday morning. Alex Zalbin is the producer and host of the Comic Book Club podcast, celebrating 20 years. I am astounded by that.
Thank you. I am too. I don't know where the time went, Wendy.
Well, it just has, see, you are such a guy who just loves entertainment, whether it be comic book form, television, big screen, and I'm dying to know what you, this type of person, is going to do on Father's Day today.
Well, write TV recaps is the first thing that I'm doing. I'm prepping some TV recaps for this evening. But otherwise, probably not watch or read anything. Just hang out with my family, maybe have a picnic in the park, and then go right back to it, get home, and probably watch a movie or something.
Excellent. Any special Father's Day movies you like to watch?
You know, I was trying to think about this earlier. The first father movie that always comes to mind is a movie called Frequency, which I don't know if you've ever seen. It is stars Jim Caviezel and Dennis Quaid, and it's a time travel movie about a son who communicates with his firefighter father, very hard to say, excuse me, through a ham radio.
And it's the sort of thing that just makes grown men cry. You got the sci-fi as well. So if you're looking for a good one to watch with your dad this evening, Frequency is always my go-to.
I have never seen that or heard of it, but I will look into that, actually. All right, so I am so excited about The Bear coming back. I know this is going to be the final season, and there was a little, I guess, was it a prequel that was dropped called Gary, focusing on Gary, Indiana, and John Bernthal and Eban, what's his name? You're very good at
Eben
this.
Eben Moss Backrack. I think that's how you pronounce it.
Yes.
Don't take it as letter of the law. But yeah, this is the fifth and final season is going to premiere on June 25th in full on Hulu. Just a little note for anybody who expects things to drop at 3 a.m. This is, I believe, dropping at 9 p.m. Eastern on Hulu. So you will have to wait until that night to watch it. But all eight episodes are going to be up at the same time. This is picking up some of the plot points without getting into spoilers of Gary, which was this special one-off episode that was both a prequel and teed up certain events in the final season. And we don't, I will say I've seen seven of the eight episodes of the final season. I won't say anything specific about them other than it is a very different season than the previous ones. I'm being very cagey with what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I think they do a really nice job of getting back to the beginning. So if it's been a couple of years since you watched the first season of the show, which was way back in 2022, recommend giving it a little bit of a binge before it shows back up again. But it's a really wonderful ending to the show. And one little tease that I'll give that I was dying to give since I watched the episodes is for Chicago fans, there's a really neat little thing in the episodes for you. And more than that, there's a really neat thing in the episodes for WGN fans in particular. So that's all I'll say about that.
Oh, my God, I have goosebumps.
Yeah. So check it out. Again, I'm not going to say anything else, but that is all debuting on Hulu on June 25th.
I cannot wait. I mean, I really just consumed this show to tie it in together. I loved it. And to this day, I will never forget the family holiday dinner scene. Jamie Lee Curtis, the whole, I mean, it was so real. I don't know what it is about families, but when you come together at the dinner table, that is very frequently where you get into fights. I don't know why it is.
No, those are, I should actually mention for anybody who's listening who doesn't know what The Bear is, just very simply, it started off about a high-end chef who has to come back home after his brother passes away to take over his Chicago beef restaurant, his classic Chicago-style beef restaurant, and it slowly, over the course of the seasons, is elevated into a more high-end restaurant, which is where we're leaving things. And the fifth season, they're out of money. They're having a change of ownership. There's a lot of things on the plate, no pun intended. But really, the crest of the show, more than anything, I would say, is this two-header of episodes in the middle of season two. Fishes is the one you're talking about. That is a flashback to this Christmas dinner, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
And it's just wildly guest-starred with Jamie Lee Curtis, Jillian Jacobs, John Mulaney, Bob Odenkirk. Just every single family member who walks in is a huge star. And then it followed up with this other episode called Forks, which has Eben Moss Backrack's character, who's been very frustrated with the whole high-end restaurant switch, going to a high-end restaurant and finding his true calling. And it is just also one of the most wonderful episodes of TV. It's just very life-affirming about finding your purpose and finding the job and the place that makes you feel more like yourself. It's fantastic.
It is just truly wonderful. It's more than just a chef show. And there are people, one that I'm married to, who gave up on it because he's like, oh, it's just stressing me out. And it does. It does do that.
Mm-hmm.
But there are warm moments. There are poignant moments. It's really one of the best made TV shows I've seen.
And it's gorgeously filmed as well. Most of the episodes are filmed by Christopher Storer, who is the showrunner and writer of most of the episodes. And additionally, he just has an incredible eye, not just for actors and conversation, but also making food look good. And if there are people like your husband who got off of the show, because it did go in a lot of like very esoteric directions over the past two seasons in particular, highly recommend getting back in on season five, which, like I said earlier, just really refocuses everything and gets back to the things that I think people liked about the first season. I haven't seen the whole thing. They held back the finale, but I think it's a really triumphant ending for the show.
Excellent. And I learned from you that this little prequel called Gary was out and about, because if you search the bear, it's not going to come up. You got it. It's Gary.
It's a little curious because it's supposed to be part of the Bear season four. It came out almost a year after the Bear season four dropped, but you would think they would put it as, hey, a bonus episode, but nope, you got to search for Gary, G-A-R-Y, in Hulu for it to come up. Watch that episode, and it is really good. It's just John Bernthal and Ebbett Moss-Bachrach, who have been friends and been in multiple plays and TV shows together, just palling around, going on an adventure. It's emotional. It's sweet. Well worth checking out.
All right, and that is The Bear final season, Hulu on Thursday. And another show that is really sweet is, and you're going to laugh at me, I watched the first episode of the regular show, The Lost Tapes. It is it's animated. I love it. I know I'm probably too old to be into this. I don't know. I just love it. Tell people about this goofy show, the regular show.
Sure. This is an animated show that started on Cartoon Network. It is about a blue jay named Mordecai and a raccoon named Rigby. They're groundskeepers, at a park. They have a lot of weird friends who hang out with them, like a gumball machine. And there's also a Yeti named Skips.
Who is voiced by Mark Hamill, by the way.
Yes. And it's very weird. A lot of Cartoon Network shows are, but it is back for the regular show, The Lost Tapes, which takes place between the scenes or between the episodes of the original run of the series, which wrapped up in, I'm forgetting when, but it wrapped up a while back. And in a way that the show creator felt was very satisfying, so he didn't want to mess with that. But instead, we're getting these lost episodes, these new episodes. And if anybody has ever watched maybe Adult Swim, it's maybe not as extreme as like an Aqua Teen Hunger Force or something like that, if people are familiar with that. But it's still, it's sweet, it's funny, it's weird. It's a good show to watch, and I believe you can check it out on Cartoon Network, and then later on this year, I think it's going to be on HBO Max, if I recall.
Excellent. I truly like that show so much, and Pops is very sweet. I'll leave it at that. All right, Alex, we're going to take a quick break and come back and talk about House of the Dragon and other things. We are talking TV with our television man, Alex Zalbin, host and producer of the Comic Book Club podcast. You can find him at comicbookclublive.com. Avatar is coming back. Season two hits Netflix. It's Wendy Snyder. We're talking with Alex Zalbin. Are these the blue people?
No, it's actually much more confusing than it used to be. There is a great classic animated series that was on Nickelodeon called Avatar: The Last Airbender that has nothing to do with the blue people created by James Cameron. Instead, as your intro put out there, it is about a fantasy world where essentially, some people have air powers, fire powers, earth powers, or water powers, and they can control them. There's one, the Avatar, that can control them all, and he, along with two of his friends, head off to save the world from the Fire Nation. The animated series was beloved. There was a pretty terrible live-action movie made by M. Night Shyamalan based on it, but nobody liked, so Netflix took their stab at it and made a pretty okay live-action version that came out adapting the first season of the animated show in 2024, and now is back adapting the second season of the animated show in live-action that is coming out on Thursday, all seven episodes. And we already know that they're going to do a third and final season, which is adapting the third and final season of the live-action live-action version of the animation. I will say, as a big fan of the animated show, highly recommend go watching that. It's one of my favorite shows of all time. I don't see the need to just do it in live-action again, but some people like it, and reportedly they tried really hard to tweak and change things for the second season, so it might still be worth checking out.
I remember my kids watching the animated one. So, yeah, I guess I knew it wasn't the blue people.
Right. It's confusing. There's a lot of avatars out there.
I know. And now an avatar is something completely different because that is like a cartoon version of yourself, right?
Yes. They did not do a live action adaptation of that, though. But
they should. House of the Dragon. All right. I have not watched a second of Game of Thrones. Am I missing something?
I think so. It's certainly not for everybody, but House of the Dragon is the prequel series to Game of Thrones. It takes place, I'm forgetting the exact timeline, but at least 100, if not more, years earlier. Actually, I think it's much. A couple of hundred years earlier. I'm getting my timeline wrong. In any case, this show in the real world timeline has been off for 2 years, and now it is coming back tonight, 9 p.m. on HBO and HBO Max. And if you don't know what it's about, once again, like Game of Thrones, it's a bunch of people fighting over a very pointy sword throne. They all want to be king, or in this case, queen. They all have a bunch of dragons, as you might be able to figure out from the title. And there's some big battle scenes going in. I have seen the first 4 episodes of the season. And I will say, despite some big spectacle, I was not totally enthused with tonight's premiere. However, next week's episode and going on is one of the most electrifying hours of TV that I have seen all year. And
wow.
Even in the Game of Thrones franchise. So if you are a fan, if you are similarly left feeling eh by this premiere, wait for next week. It really picks up, and it is worth jumping in. It's taken a little while for this show to find its footing, surprisingly, but I really do think it gets there in the 3rd season.
All right, and that's House of the Dragon.
Yes, premieres tonight, 9 p.m. on HBO and HBO Max.
Barack Obama was in town because the Obama Presidential Center had its grand opening, star-studded event. I didn't see Larry David at the opening.
He was probably at the Larry David Presidential Library premiere, would be my guess. But the little connection there is he has an HBO show called Life, Larry, and the Pursuit of Unhappiness.
Perfect.
It's going to be premiering one episode a week on HBO on Fridays, starting on June 26th. And this is unlike Curb Your Enthusiasm, which had some sketch comedy-like elements, but mostly was an ongoing story. This is a straight-up 7-episode historical sketch comedy show about the history of America. It is produced by Barack Obama, and he even appears in the episode somehow and somewhere. We don't know exactly how yet, but most of it is going from the American Revolution on, and the cast list is absolutely wild. Bill Hader is going to be in it as Abraham Lincoln. Catherine Hahn is as Mary Todd Lincoln. John Hamm and Sean Hayes are going to be the Wright brothers. Jerry Seinfeld is in it. Chris Parnell. I could go on and on. Basically, if there's a comedy star who appeared somewhere on Curb Your Enthusiasm or otherwise, including most of his regular cast, Jeff Garlin and, oh gosh, I'm blanking on her name, but the
Susie Essman?
Yes, are both going to be on it as well. So all of his regulars will be there, and that's going to be rolling out weekly, starting on Friday. Maybe not the best celebration of America's 250th, but it'll certainly be the funniest.
Yeah, I cannot wait. Life, Larry, and the Pursuit of Unhappiness. What an appropriate title. And Barack Obama, he produced this, you said, and is also in it?
Yeah, it's Barack and Michelle Obama through the production company Higher Ground produced it, but he is appearing in some capacity. I'm going to guess not in a sketch comedy capacity, but I guess we'll see.
I cannot wait. It premieres Friday on HBO and HBO Max. And yes, we are celebrating America's 250th birthday. And tell us about the American Experiment.
Sure. This is a new, slightly more serious than the other thing we talked about, a documentary series that is going to be premiering all on Netflix on June 24th. This takes us from the American Revolutionary War all through George Washington's presidency. and it has a bananas list of people as well, but again, much more seriously than the other one, including Hillary Clinton is going to be in this. Martin Sheen is providing voices for some of the reenactments. Mike Pence will be in it as well. Al Gore, I believe. I could probably pick out a couple of other names, but it's Nancy Pelosi, Rand Paul. I could go on and on here as well. These are 5-hour-long documentaries, and again, it's going to premiere in full on the 24th, and you can check that out if you're curious for a reevaluation of America's history through a modern lens and what it means for the country to be turning 250. This is something you can check out on Netflix later this week.
I'll be honest with you, I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, I'm really curious as well, because I like the idea of not just being like, here's what happened that you found out in elementary school, but what does that mean 250 years later as we look back on that? That's a pretty fascinating perspective.
Yeah. The American Experiment hits Netflix on Wednesday, and I saw a promo for our... Is Eric Andre and John Cena hooking up for something? Because this looks cray-cray.
Yeah, they are in a new movie that's going to be hitting Netflix on June 26th. That's Friday, called Little Brother. And this looks, as you might imagine from this weird mismatched cast, totally ridiculous. John Cena is a straight-laced guy who was paired in a Big Brother, Little Brother program with Eric Andre. Years later, as John Cena's character is starting to get his life together, Eric Andre shows up and messes it up. I think you've seen this movie a million times. You know how it's probably going to go. They'll hate each other, and then they'll love each other, and they'll both grow a little bit. But Eric Andre is just a rogue madman in these things, and John Cena is shockingly funny in everything that he does. So I'm excited to check this out when this premieres on Netflix on Friday.
Little Brother. All right. Well, Alex, thank you for joining us on this Father's Day, and happy Father's Day to you. We always appreciate talking to you.
Oh, thanks so much, Wendy. I appreciate talking to you as well.
All right. Have a good one. He's Alex Zalbin. He is host and producer of Comic Book Club podcast. You can find him at comicbookclublive.com. We have Shawnee's News coming your way next from the Northwestern Medicine News.
Lindholm Roofing has appointments available now to provide you a complete roofing, siding, gutter, and tuck pointing inspection. Call 773-283-7675 or lindholmroofing.com. Tell them that Lou sent you. Lindholm Roofing, their family has your family covered.
It is Sunday morning. It's me, Wendy Snyder, and I know that Chicago Pride Fest started yesterday, but it ain't over yet. It ain't over until today ends. And joining us right now is Mark Lieberson, festival chairperson of Chicago Pride Fest. Mark, thank you so much for joining us.
Wendy, it's a pleasure. Glad to be here with you this morning.
Listen, I work on Sundays, so it's kind of awkward. I couldn't talk to you yesterday to talk about Pride Fest, but we have another day. This is the 25th annual, correct?
That is correct. And if yesterday is a predictor, it was an incredible day, and we're hopeful that today will be a great day as well. It kicks off right at noon with the pet parade that Miss Boozy hosts every year. We have pets of all shapes and sizes that parade from the north end of the festival at Grace, Broadway and Halsted, all the way to Addison, and then prizes are given out on the stage over there. It's a lot of fun.
When did this begin? I know 25 years ago, but give us a little history of Chicago Pride Fest.
Pride Fest began as a small festival, actually the same weekend as the Pride Parade, and then we moved it back to the weekend prior because, you know, really the entire month of June is all about celebrating Pride. And with that, we thought there's really nothing special going on the weekend before, and rather than trying to cram everything into the last weekend of the month, we moved it a week ahead, and it became one of the most popular festivals in the city. It's really just so much fun. It brings in people, obviously, from the LGBTQ community, but it brings in people from all of Chicago's communities because it's just an incredible block party energy, just great vibes, great music, and we're unique in the world of street fairs here in Chicago. While we have local bands here, we also have an incredible dance stage that's always packed right in the middle of the festival. And then we bring in national acts, I mean, incredible performers that perform on our north stage. So it's just an incredible full day of entertainment.
All right. And it was going on yesterday and today. Give us some of the highlights of what's going on.
Sure. After the pep parade, we kick off our drag show over on the North Stage. Great fun, incredible performers from our local community. And then we go to Willa Ford, one of the legendary dance divas, singer, and she is going to be joining us at 2 o'clock. We have legendary Broadway performer, known from his performances in Rent, Anthony Rapp. And then we're moving on from him to Nini Coca, who is one of the stars from RuPaul's Drag Race at 5 p.m. And we bring in one of our favorite local bands, Dancing Queen, on the North Stage. They're going to be kicking off at 6 p.m. It's all about ABBA. And from there, we go on to Flyanna Boss, incredible rap duo, and then Black Girl Magic, also having a celebration. It's their 10th year, and the Vixen created the show 10 years ago. It's all drag, all Black Girl Magic, and she has two special stars, Evie Oddly and Heidi in Closet from RuPaul Drag Race as well. I mean, honestly, it's such a good time. And then on the other stage, national rock act G-Flip is going to be closing out the stage, and local favorites Rod Tough Curl and the Bench Press will be there. Hello Weekend, and that dance party in the center of the festival, you don't want to miss that either. I mean, honestly, I walk through the festival when I have breaks from what I'm doing working, and I just love the vibe. I love the energy, people having so much fun.
It is all about fun. It really is. And you know what, Mark? I really would like to become a diva. How do I get my diva papers? I don't see me ever being a diva.
Well, diva's all about attitude. You know, I spoke with some of the drag queens about it. I think the priority is, you don't care what happens, because something always goes wrong in drag. Something always goes wrong in life. And, you know, as they say, they just put on I'll never forget this. One of the great performers at Pride Fest, when we had rain one year, I'm like, are you good going on? She goes, I have my waterproof makeup and I am going on. And away she strutted on that stage, and it was an incredible show. The crowd was going crazy. It was so much fun. But you know, I do have to say, Wendy, it is a lot of fun, but Pride remains a protest as well. And
yeah, explain that a little bit, because there's still a lot of prejudice out there, isn't there?
Well, you know, it's an unfortunate thing. People have politicized hate, and they're using it to try to divide people in this country. And we have made such incredible progress, really making people a part of the fabric of our country, or acknowledging people who are a part of the fabric. Because if you stop and think about it, you know, the LGBTQ community is represented everywhere. We are the firemen, we're the police department, we're part of the healthcare community, we're part of the school community, the teachers, we're part of, you know, we're your neighbors and your friends and your family. And the idea of dividing people and diminishing the part that they play in society, the artists and everyone else who really are part of the fabric of what makes the U.S. a great place, that's tragic. And so what we're looking for at this point, we depended upon an alliance with allies, all the people, the friends and families who love us and the people we work with, to support us and let their politicians know that, hey, you got to stop this hate. And that's how we actually managed to achieve gay rights when I was, you know, younger, and actually why I'm able to enjoy having my marriage respected in the same way as anyone else's in this country. And what harm does that cause for anyone? I think that allowing people to live their lives freely only makes this country stronger, because we have people then all contributing equally and feeling valued. And aren't those all good things that we should be going for? Right now, we have to push back against that, because so many people are trying to undo the rights of others when it's not hurting their lives at all, and really diminishing people who've been strong contributors to this country for so many decades, you know, centuries. We've been here forever, and we're not giving up what we've earned and what we've worked for. So we hope our allies will work with us to maintain that.
Mark, you put that so eloquently, because we are all more alike than we are different. We really are, and we need to know
that's the truth. That's one of the sad things that I think about when I think about what has evolved with social media, as I've grown through the years. You know, I remember being when they used to raid gay bars just because they were gay bars and people could be arrested and they would attempt to destroy people's lives. And then we came together and people supported the idea that this is bad and that this stupidity is divisive and not good. And I think that the way social media has now played us to really start to create and they just want everyone angry and everyone upset or everyone feeling threatened. You know, I've been working with drag queens for decades. I have yet to meet a dangerous drag queen.
And
the idea that people are saying that, I mean, I've seen the drag queen story times. And to the people, the kids who are there and their families who are enjoying it, there's no harm being caused. These are performers, and they're great performers, and they tell a great story. So no one's getting hurt. And the idea that people are being harmed is really just is a tragic unfortunate story that's been woven and we need to unweave it.
Yeah, because it's a lie, basically. And, you know, you need to kind of at some point mind your own business. And if it's not something you're into, don't go to Pride Fest this weekend. Listen, Mark, I'm telling you, I don't like wearing yellow. So you know what? I don't wear yellow. I mean,
and
really.
You know, Wendy, you said it 100% correct. I agree with you. Nobody is making you do anything.
Right.
We don't make, you know, that. Nobody is making me be in a relationship with someone I don't want to be in a relationship with. Nobody wants to be in a relationship with someone who doesn't want to be in a relationship with them. And people have the right to go wherever they want. You don't want to shop at Bloomingdale's, go to Macy's.
Right.
Whatever it is that you
go
want to
do. Go to Target.
Do.
Who you cares? Know?
Exactly. I don't care what you do. And
yeah.
I think if we all just stop caring about things that don't matter and start caring about things that do matter, you know, what about health care? What about ensuring safety nets for people in this country? What about making sure that we're taking care of the elderly? What about the things that really matter? Hunger. You know, there's so many issues in this country that should unite us to try to figure out what to do to support others. Instead, what are we doing? Dividing and to what end goal? And I think I really strongly blame a lot of this on social media, and I more strongly blame it on the hateful rhetoric from politicians that just really needs to be stopped.
Well, let's all come together at Pride Fest. This is day number 2, and where do we tell people to go? I'm just pointing, go that way.
I think that that's a really good question. And you know, the celebration of Pride still continues. We do not let anybody stop us. So while I'm talking about the fact that Pride is still a protest, we are going to celebrate. And the celebration is between between Addison and Grace. So it's really easy to get there on the red line if you wanted to take public transportation or have an Uber drop you off at the IHOP, or head over to Walgreens on Broadway over at Waveland and you can walk right in. There's a gate right there. It's really easy to get to. It's North Halsted in the middle of the Lakeview neighborhood. We're close to Wrigley Field. And you do want to come out and enjoy yourself. And I hope that everybody, you know, helps to continue to celebrate Pride into the legendary Pride Parade that occurs every year. That is next Sunday, which I can't wait for.
Yes, and that's why we also wanted to talk to you, Mark. We're getting you, listeners can go to the second day of Pride Fest right now, but just to let people know, bulletin, the Pride Parade, which is a blast, is happening next Sunday, a week from today, 11 a.m., right?
It is 11 a.m., and the city of Chicago comes out for Pride Fest. It is a amazing event. I mean, the energy on the street, and I love watching it on North Halsted because, you know, North Halsted, I don't know if you know this, but it is the oldest, one of the oldest remaining LGBTQ business districts in the entire country. And there used to be business districts that were just LGBTQ, kind of like gay ghettos. Those have basically disappeared, and the strength of that unity in a tight community has fallen as things spread out. But in Chicago, we have this tight, wonderful street, rainbow adorned, and businesses that are owned and operated by members of the community. It's a great place to watch the parade. Of course, the parade has a wonderful route, and you can watch it all the way along. If you look online, you'll be able to find information about the parade very easily. Chicago Pride does an amazing job putting this together.
Okay, and website, best website to tell people to go to?
for the festival, I would just go to northhalsted.com, N-O-R-T-H, just one H, A-L-S-T-E-D, .com, and you will find all the information that you need there about today's festivities. And then if you're looking for information on the Pride Parade, you can go to pridechicago.org. And pridechicago.org has all the information about Chicago's Pride Parade, the 2026 parade, and how to get there and what you'll see. And it's over a million people celebrating together, and over 15,000 people participate in this parade. It's just an amazing event.
It's fun, it's colorful, and it's next weekend. And Pride Fest today, 25th annual. Mark Lieberson, Festival Chairperson of Chicago Pride Fest. Congrats on 25 years, Mark.
Thank you so very much. And thank you to the City of Chicago for making the LGBTQ community feel valued and part of our fabric of our society here. And we love this city. So thank you. And we love WBBM. Thank you for having me on here today.
WGN, but that's all right.
Oh, WGN. I'm so sorry. I can't believe I just did that.
No,
oh,
it's,
Lord.
I know you've been on all over the place, so it's still cool.
I think I'm just exhausted today because, you know, yesterday I was up at 6 in the morning with the festival and I didn't get home till midnight. So
I know,
working,
man.
And this morning we're going crazy already.
It's all cool. Don't worry about it, Mark. We still care about
Thanks,
you as well.
Wendy. I appreciate it.
All
Thank
right.
you very, very much.
We'll talk to you soon. Get some sleep after 10 o'clock tonight. I love it. That's the best. All right. We have your phone calls. We have garden talk because it's the first day of summer, people. That's coming up after the 11:30 news. 312-981-7200. It's WGN. I love to let things grow. I'm a garden girl this time of year. It's Wendy Snyder here. Along with our show horticulturist, this is Dan Costa from Vern Goward's Greenhouse in Hinsdale. How you doing, Dan?
Oh, pretty good, Wendy. Hope you are, too. And happy Father's Day to everyone there who is one.
Or who has one.
Yes.
I think that counts everyone, I guess. All right, Dan, I got my garden going. I have some tomatoes. I need to come to Vern Goers. I need to buy some more basil. But cilantro has been planted, and it's very wilty. Same with my Italian parsley, my flat leaf parsley. And I planted it a little more in the shade because I know it can burn out. What can I do to keep this going? I know you said cilantro kind of comes, it bolts, and then you just you lose it. But the other herbs, what am I supposed to do to keep them going all season long?
Well, in general, herbs want a lot of sun and to get a little dry between waterings. They don't like to be too wet. Most of our herbs are native to France, around the Mediterranean region, so they're used to being on hillsides and that, where there's a lot of gravel and stuff in the soil. And so it's quite well-drained and very sunny. I don't know what your parsley is liking being in more shade. I would advise putting it into full sun.
Well, full sun constitutes how many hours a day? Because my garden pretty much gets sun.
Full sun is 6 hours or more a day. So it's not necessarily sunrise to sunset.
Yeah. Well, it's not really in the shade, but my neighbor has this beautiful clematis that kind of covers up some of the sun. But it gets probably 6 hours a day. Just maybe not the noonday sun, which is probably best, right?
Yeah, well, the afternoon sun is much stronger, so that gives a lot more benefit than the morning sun would.
All right. And what about the proper way to trim your herbs? I planted thyme, and last year I had probably 70 jalapeno peppers. I was giving them away to people. My peppers were going nuts. Tomatoes last year, not so great, and everybody kind of had a problem with all the heat. But herbs, what like, do I just cut off some thyme when I need it? What about rosemary?
Yeah, I just cut them back as needed. If I need, you know, 3-inch piece of rosemary. I cut that off. Same with the thyme. I'll cut off what I need. Later in the season, like when the basil starts getting really, it'll get tall and leggy.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to cut it way back. Cut just above either a pair of leaves or where a pair of leaves used to be, and it'll re-sprout from the stem. And then there'll be much fuller, greener foliage, much more tasty. And the plant will become more bushy, so you have a better harvest. But with most of the herbs, you can just cut as needed. Like I said, late in the season, though, I will cut stuff back quite a bit and dry stuff for the wintertime.
Can you grow these herbs inside, Dan? Because there are people that sell herbs. There are people that swear to me that they put rosemary or basil in a grower pot, and they put it on their windowsill and give it sun, and they grow it year-round. Is that possible?
We don't get enough real sun here in the middle of winter. You know, in January, February, we're mostly cloudy most of the time.
Yeah.
And so the herbs do not do well. I have rosemary myself, which is in a big pot. And in the fall, around late October or so, I put it in my basement on the basement floor. The basement is basically unheated. And it just sits there all winter, and I throw some water on it occasionally, and it's like 3 or 4 years old now. It doesn't want to have the heat of the house during the wintertime. It wants to take a rest. So you keep it cooler.
Okay, I just lost my text line, Eli, so you have to sign me in again. But someone has texted wondering if you can root sage.
Oh, yeah.
How do you do that?
Take a piece about 2.5 inches maybe off the top and pluck off any leaves that near that cut, and then insert it into the soil. Keep the potting soil moist, and it should root pretty easily. Sage is not a difficult one to root.
Okay, and are there other herbs you can do that with?
Yeah, a lot of them.
Really?
Most of them, actually.
All
right. Most of our herbs are members of the mint family, and, you know, mint is a very strong growing type of a plant. And so all these other ones will also grow quite well and root quite well. Just from nice, regular little cuttings. You don't have to use any rooting hormone or anything. Just put them into the soil, keep it moist, and they should no problem to root.
In addition to it being Father's Day, it's the first day of summer, and I'm telling you, it's just so great to sit out in your yard, if you have one. My clematis are beautiful purple ones, and they are going crazy this year. Why? Yeah,
they're having a good year.
Is it because of the rain that we've been having?
Yeah, a lot of moisture, and they really like the cooler temperatures we've had lately.
Ah.
So it's not stressing them out.
Raspberries.
I'm glad to see the change over to summer from spring. And I was thinking to myself that I had a very long sleep last night because I went to bed in the spring and I woke up in the summer.
Yes, so today's the longest day of the year, right, I believe?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Raspberries have taken over a very good portion of my wildflower garden, and every year there are more and more. What do I do? Do I just start digging them up? There are too many.
Yeah, you and I have the same problem.
Yeah.
You got to dig them up or pull them out or get rid of them. Right now, the raspberries are just starting to ripen on there, so if you can get at it ASAP to keep the birds from eating the nice ripe berries and spreading the seed all over the place.
Oh, is that what's happening?
Oh, yeah. And the raspberry, too, when the cane hits the soil, it will take root and form a new plant. So it's very invasive, very aggressive.
And you got to wear gloves. I don't like those little pricklies. I really don't. All right. Well, we have listeners that have some questions for you, so we're going to take a break. Dan Costa is the show horticulturist who works his full-time job at Vern Goer's Greenhouse in Hinsdale. And 312-981-7200 is the number to call. We could do indoor plants, outdoor plants, whatever you want. Dan will handle it all, but garden time, it's first day of summer. I'm sure that's what we'll focus on. So 312-981-7200. Yeah, we say let it grow as well. It's Wendy Snyder here with you along with Dan Costa, horticulturist over at Vern Goer's Greenhouse in Hinsdale. Dan, we have some critter questions for you from some of our listeners. Corey is on the line. Hi, Corey. This is Dan.
Hi, Dan.
Hello.
How are you doing today?
Oh, okay. What can I do for you?
I have three large gardens in the back. I have a very big yard, and the voles have taken over it. They use the zebra grass as a disco. They've got like just paths going everywhere. They go across the path that I made and made it like where a divot in there. And they've dragged the weeds through the flower beds to the point where the flowers are disappearing.
All right, first of all, could you someone explain to me what a vole is? I know what a mole is. Is a vole similar, Dan?
Yeah, it's similar. It's like a smaller mouse, kind of a critter. It's a little rodent.
How do you know it's not a mouse, Corey?
Because it's ugly, it's blind, it's got like claws instead of like almost webbed claws instead of like mice feet.
Okay. Yeah. Dan, how does Corey get rid of her vole problem?
That's gonna be difficult. Trapping probably one of your best methods to get rid of them. You can use certain things. There's an electronic spike thing that you can put into the ground, and it makes noises.
But does it make noise where
moles,
I hear
it? It could also work for the voles.
Wait, Dan, she has a great question, because I think one of my neighbors has one of these electric things, and I'm old, so my ears have gotten bad and I can't hear it, but my boys are in their 20s and they're like, "You don't hear that humming?" And I'm like, "No, I certainly don't." But Dan, some of those electric things make like a humming noise, don't they?
Yeah, that's what's supposed to scare the critters away though.
No.
I don't know, but Corey, you may not be able to hear it, cuz our ears lose a bunch of they can't hear a lot of different tones as we get older.
It's true, and I'm older, so.
So that's one
pretty
way.
Much,
what else?
Much you're gonna, trap them.
You're not going to trap them. Are you going to do that, Corey? Be honest.
No. What would I do with them?
Yeah. Well.
So.
There's nothing else she can use, Dan. Like any kind of. Should she put a little... No, they'll get through the little chicken wire or something, right?
Yeah, they're very small.
Oh, yeah, and they dig real good.
All right.
So there's nothing really else, huh?
No,
Is there anything that deters them away from the garden, like some kind of concoction or something that...
Like cayenne pepper or something?
No, you can try that. And you can try the regular repellents. You know, there's lots of repellents on the market. The blood meal and some of the others, but you do have to reapply that after every rain or every watering, because they will wash away.
Yeah. All right. Well, Corey, good luck. It seems like that's going to be kind of difficult for you. David has a ground cover question. David, this is Dan. What's your question?
Well, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I've got an area in front of my concrete porch that's 20 feet by about 4. And I had some yews pulled out a few years ago. I got rid of all the roots. It's got about 2 to 3 hours of sunlight in the early afternoon. The rest is kind of shady. And I'd like something low maintenance. I like the look of, been walking around the neighborhood. I like the look of something called variegated gout weed, but I understand.
Oh, you don't want that.
That's invasive.
And it's invasive, and it's very difficult to get rid of if you ever try to eradicate it.
It's almost impossible. What's an Illinois native that, I like the look of it, that kind of light green and medium kind of light leaf. What's an Illinois native plant that I could consider?
As far as natives, you could do something like the wild geranium.
Ooh, those are pretty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it spreads, and it will fill in the area, and pink flowers in the springtime.
Yeah, there's something called Biocava geranium. Ran across, and then another one I ran across. Campanula birch. That ring a bell?
The Jacobo geranium that you were talking about is very good, and it's evergreen, and fill in the area.
Yeah.
The creeping campanulas, sometimes they can get a little bit invasive and out of control, but if you digged out the extra pieces, they're just fine.
So geranium.
You could also consider something like vinca ground cover, which is low growing, but it will fill in the area nicely.
I saw vinca, yeah.
It sounds like geranium may be the route to go. And I have some raspberries I can give you.
No, I got plenty of those. How would I protect that? Do I need to protect it in the winter, the geranium?
Maybe the first winter, if you're going to be planting it in midsummer or late summer, put down a nice couple inches of mulch over it. But once they establish, they're pretty bulletproof. I wouldn't worry about it.
And I'm okay planting them in the next few weeks or so.
Keep them watered, yes, because it's going to get hot.
Oh, yeah.
Good luck to you, David. Thank you so much for calling. And real quickly here, Charlie, you have a squirrel problem?
Yes, I do.
All right, before we get... Wait, hang on one second. 815 has texted in. Corey called us with some problems with voles, and someone suggested to grow peppermint. Voles hate peppermint. So there's just a suggestion for you. Now, Charlie, back to your squirrel problem.
Sure. We have a cherry tree that's about 15 feet tall. In the last few seasons, we've gotten quarts and quarts of sour cherries that are great for making pies and other kinds of recipes like that. Wednesday this week, I noticed that some of the cherries were turning nice bright red, and I was going to pick them this weekend. And I was out of town when I got back. I noticed that the tree was completely bare because a marauding band of squirrels had completely eaten all of the fruit.
You sure it wasn't the neighbor?
Just as much as you were.
It was not the neighbors, and I don't think it was birds, because I've seen squirrels three or four at a time just running around the tree. And the ship has sailed, of course, for this season, but I was wondering if you had any thoughts about what I might do for future seasons to keep that from happening again.
Some of the gardening supply companies online, like gardeners.com and that, they do sell netting, kind of like bags that you can put over the tree, and that will help to keep the critters out of there. The squirrels and the birds both were probably having a feast. They're very observant of those things, and they get there quick. But other than a physical barrier, like a netting, there's really nothing else you can put on there to keep them out. They will try to get under it, so you have to make sure that you try to secure it well so they can't climb up the trunk and just go under the netting. But other than a physical barrier, that's about the only thing you can do.
You should try it, Charlie. I wish you the best of luck with all your great tart cherries. I hope the squirrels don't get them next year.
Thank you for your help.
Okay, absolutely. Mm-hmm. We have another listener who has rabbit problems. And also 630 says, aside from all the rabbits, I've tried using over-the-counter products. Nothing works. Trying to avoid fencing. Also, since potatoes and carrots grow underground, should I really be worried if the rabbits feast on the leaves above ground?
Well, it doesn't help the plant gain a lot of strength for putting it into the root vegetables.
but they're not likely to go and like try to dig out the potatoes or something like that. They're not that energetic. So they will be feeding on the foliage parts.
And is that going to hurt the carrots below or the potatoes below?
Depends on how much damage they do to the foliage. If it's quite extensive, then it might weaken the plant and you might not get very much development in the root part. But if it's not too extensive, it may not really damage it too much.
Well, that's good news. Dan, we are out of time, but we'd love to talk to you again. In the meantime, people can go see you at Vern Goer's Greenhouse, 5620 South Oak Street in Hinsdale. Thanks for being our show horticulturist. We appreciate it.
Anytime.
Happy Father's Day to you and yours out there, and news coming your way next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.
Tequila. Oh, yeah. Tequila.
Wendy Snyder here with you. It's a Sunday afternoon now, and our city has the greatest fests going on throughout the whole summer. We try to focus on a few of them, and tequila, yeah, that's not a bad one. And mix it with tacos, and you got yourself the Taco and Tequila Fest here in Chicago. Cortland Hickey joins us right now. He's president of the Wrightwood Area Parks Advisory Councilor. Hola, Cortland.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Our newsman Dave Schwann was dancing like Pee Wee Herman to that tequila music.
It's irresistible.
I know, isn't it? So Chicago Taco and Tequila Fest, I'll just say yes. This is happening next weekend, right? We wanted to give people a heads up.
That's correct. Yeah, it's a Friday and Saturday event, and then Sunday is the big Pride Parade here in Chicago. So
yes,
there's not a lot of fest going on during the parade.
Exactly. There is so much to do throughout the Chicago area. I'm the self-proclaimed queen of the fest, and tacos and tequila, that's talking to me. Who is participating?
So the tacos and tequila, this is our second year in Wrightwood Park, which is in the Lincoln Park neighborhood, Ashland and Wrightwood. And we have a really great lineup. Last year, we were, overwhelmingly successful. People showed up from all parts of the city and really enjoyed all of that we had to offer. We have some really great taco vendors, the Cabos Tacos, Cafe Tola, Granitas Rodan, Caseria Sabor Real, Tandoor Char House, which is Tiki Masala Tacos, Enrique's
wow.
Place. I mean, the list is actually really long. Get through every single one, but there's some amazing taquerias here.
Okay, so there's more than just one or two.
I think there's 14 different taquerias, and everybody's well prepared. They have a lot of product, and they're ready to put them together really quickly for everybody. They pair together with your tequila tasting or your margarita flights, which are some of the things that we offer as well.
That's like magic to my ears, listening. Margarita flights. Nothing like a margarita during the summer. I'm telling you, it works out perfectly. Some great entertainment is lined up. I was just looking through the schedule. Friday night, actually Friday early evening, 4:45, Tom Holland and the Shuffle Kings. Tom's a totally talented guy and really worth seeing. And then Saturday, Gizeh is a reggae band. I've seen them several times before. Dancing Queen and ABBA Salute happening on Saturday. Some great live entertainment.
Absolutely. We're going with sort of a more laid-back, chill vibe, like giving people time to eat their tacos, sample their tequilas or margaritas, and relax in the park. I mean, it's a beautiful park. Obviously, the weather's been so nice lately, and this kind of gives everybody a chance to enjoy the music, but also enjoy all the amenities. There's some shopping as well, and all of the different things that we offer from this festival.
Now, what is your favorite taco? I know that's hard to say. Every time I ask this, listeners text in and say to me, that's like asking who your favorite child is. But Cortland, what do you think what's your perfect taco?
Well, if I had to go with one, I honestly always would go with Tandoor Char House, the Tiki Masala Tacos. I mean, I know it's fusion. It's not sort of traditional, but they are always just amazing, and the people over there are just great people, and they really put together excellent tacos. They put them together fast. They're always flavorful. They have a lot of different options. They have obviously chicken, but they also have vegetarian and vegan options as well. And they're a local Lincoln Park establishment. So it's, even though it's an Indian restaurant, they have amazing tacos.
So masala tacos, is it chicken? Is it beef? Is it your choice?
It's chicken tea masala, with onions, cilantro, cheese, all that stuff. It's just a delicious, delicious.
I think the taco is a magical food. I really do.
Well, it's universally accepted. I think, there's always something for everybody when it comes to tacos, whether it's fish tacos or vegan tacos or chicken, beef, pork. I mean, there's so many different options and so many different ways to have it that it appeals to everyone.
It really does. And then, so tequila tasting, are there going to be different types of tequila? I know there's Blanco, there's Reposado, and what am I missing? What's the other one?
So there's we have a number of brands. 123 Organic Tequila has both Blanco, Reposado, and Añejo. Almar de Jaguar has all three as well. We have Casa Rica Tequila. We have El Luchador. We have Petalones Organic Tequila as well. And everybody offers all three basic varieties. Reposada, Añejo, and Blanco. And I believe there are some mezcal tastings as well.
Wendy Snyder here with you. It's a Sunday afternoon now, and our city has the greatest fests going on throughout the whole summer. We try to focus on a few of them, and tequila, that's not a bad one. And mix it with tacos, and you got yourself the Taco and Tequila Fest here in Chicago. Cortland Hickey joins us right now. He's president of the Wrightwood Area Parks Advisory Councilor. Hola, Cortland.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Our newsman, Dave Schwann, was dancing like Pee Wee Herman to that tequila music.
It's irresistible.
I know, isn't it? So Chicago Taco and Tequila Fest, I'll just say yes. This is happening next weekend, right? We wanted to give people a heads up.
That's correct. Yeah, it's a Friday and Saturday event, and then Sunday is the big Pride Parade here in Chicago. So
yes,
there's not a lot of fest going on during the parade.
Exactly. There is so much to do throughout the Chicago area. I'm the self-proclaimed queen of the fest, and tacos and tequila, that's talking to me. Who is participating?
So the tacos and tequila, this is our second year in Wrightwood Park, which is in the Lincoln Park neighborhood, Ashland and Wrightwood. And we have a really great lineup. Last year, we were, overwhelmingly successful. People showed up from all parts of the city and really enjoyed all of that we had to offer. We have some really great taco vendors, the Cabos Tacos, Cafe Tola, Granitas Rodan, Quesería Sabor Real, Tandoor Char House, which is Tiki Masala Tacos, Enrique's Place. I mean, the list is actually really long. Get through every single one, but there's some amazing taquerias here.
Okay, so there's more than just one or two.
I think there's 14 different taquerias, and everybody's well prepared. They have a lot of product, and they're ready to put them together really quickly for everybody to pair together with your tequila tasting or your margarita flights, which are some of the things that we offer as well.
That's like magic to my ears, listening. Margarita flights. Nothing like a margarita during the summer. I'm telling you, it works out perfectly. Some great entertainment is lined up. I was just looking through the schedule. Friday night, actually Friday early evening, 4:45, Tom Holland and the Shuffle Kings. Tom's a totally talented guy and really worth seeing. And then Saturday, Gizeh is a reggae band. I've seen them several times before. Dancing Queen and ABBA Salute happening on Saturday. Some great live entertainment.
Absolutely. We're going with sort of a more laid-back, chill vibe, like giving people time to eat their tacos, sample their tequilas or margaritas, and relax in the park. I mean, it's a beautiful park. Obviously, the weather's been so nice lately. And this kind of gives everybody a chance to enjoy the music, but also enjoy all the amenities. There's some shopping as well, and all of the different things to offer that we offer from this festival.
Now, what is your favorite taco? I know that's hard to say. Every time I ask this, listeners text in and say to me, you know, that's like asking who your favorite child is. But, Cortland, what do you think what's your perfect taco?
Well, if I had to go with one, I honestly always would go with Tandoor Char House, the Tiki Masala tacos. I mean, I know it's fusion, it's not sort of traditional, but they are always just amazing, and the people over there are just great people, and they really put together excellent tacos. They put them together fast. They're always flavorful. They have a lot of different options. They have obviously chicken, but they also have vegetarian and vegan options as well. And they're a local Lincoln Park establishment. So it's, even though it's an Indian restaurant, they have amazing tacos.
So masala tacos, is it chicken? Is it beef? Is it your choice?
Yeah, it's chicken tiki masala, with onions, cilantro, cheese, all that stuff. It's just delicious.
I think the taco is a magical food. I really do.
Well, it's universally accepted. I think, there's always something for everybody when it comes to tacos, whether it's fish tacos or vegan tacos or chicken, beef, pork. I mean, there's so many different options and so many different ways to have it that it appeals to everyone.
It really does. And then, so tequila tasting, are there going to be different types of tequila? I know there's Blanco, there's Reposado, and what am I missing? What's the other one?
So there's, we have a number of brands. 123 Organic Tequila has both Blanco, Reposado, and Añejo. El Mar de Jaguar has all three as well. We have Casa Rica tequila, we have El Luchador, we have Patalones organic tequila as well, and everybody offers all three basic varieties, the Reposada, Añejo, and Blanco, and I believe there are some mezcal tastings as well.
All right, and margarita flights, I think you've piqued our interest. This is all happening next Friday and Saturday, Chicago Taco and Tequila Fest. This is your second annual, correct?
That's correct. You know, at its heart, this is a community event that we have put on with our partners at Chicago Events Management, and they help really put the whole thing together for us, and this is a community event that is a fundraiser for the community. Doing this event and other events this summer in Wrightwood Park in order to raise money to rebuild the park, basically, right? To fix it all up and to do a lot. And so the events are really key to that. And I think a lot of people maybe don't necessarily realize that charities are behind a lot of these events, and the money raised goes right back into the community. As a really great example, because we do lots of other events. I hear you like events. We do a really great event called the Lincoln Park Wine Fest as well. And that event is usually held in Jonquil Park, which is right down the street. And we just finished a $500,000 renovation with all brand new grass and upgrades to the lighting, upgrades to the playground and everything like that. So if you're in the Lincoln Park neighborhood, check out the Jonquil Park. Renovation is complete now, so it's really nice to see these things come together. We have fun, we have a great time at the events, but they raise the money, and the money goes back right into the community.
And I just love all these fests in Chicago. We have such a great city, we really do. Is there a website to send listeners to find out more information?
Absolutely. It's ChicagoEvents.com. That has tacos and tequila, as well as all of our other neighborhood events we have in Lincoln Park. We have tacos and tequilas. We have the world-famous Taste of Lincoln Avenue. I don't know if you've ever been to that. That's our main event that I've been in charge of for the last 20 years. We have our wine festival, and we have some other great events coming to Wrightwood Park this summer as well.
All right. Well, we'll talk to you later on down the road this summer. Appreciate you joining us today. Cortland Hickey, president of the Wrightwood Area Parks Advisory Council, and again, ChicagoEvents.com, correct?
That's correct. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely, Cortland. Happy Father's Day to you, and if it doesn't apply to your dad, because I don't know how to politically correct say it, you know, if you're not a father, whatever. All right, just happy Father's Day. That's a blanket statement that will cover all. We will continue. I want to talk to Dave Schwann about something. I heard him on the air over the weekend, and it was fascinating, so I will talk to him next here on 720 WGN. It's Wendy Snyder here with you, and Charlie Remeliotis is in the sports lounge. We have Eli Burke, who's producing the show. Caitlin, oh boy, Caitlin's interning today. Caitlin, what's your last name?
No worries, Gajavich.
Gajavich. I don't even know how to spell that phonetically. So Caitlin is interning with us. Thank you for being here. And Dave Schwann, of course, in the newsroom. Schwanny, I heard some double Daves going on WGN radio. Was it yesterday or Friday? You and Dave Plyer were doing some history talk.
Oh, yeah, right. Our history segment that we've done ever since Dave's been doing the show.
Are you kidding me? This is the first time I heard it. Oh, bummer.
Yeah, we always have done a history thing ever since Dave's been doing this show. And then when we were, when he was on, oh, some years ago now, doing an late Saturday night, early Sunday morning overnight program, and I would come in to start my, you know, work day on Sundays at 4, and he was ending at 4:30, 5 o'clock at that time. So we just, you know, we started that and have done it ever since.
I loved it.
Right.
Yeah. Can I'm going to have to look for him at WGNradio.com because I am late to the Double Dave party. I have some questions for you. We learned a lot of stuff from you during your far-flung forecast earlier.
Yeah.
The first U.S. president to commemorate Father's Day, we learned it was Woodrow Wilson.
Right.
The president who signed a law establishing Father's Day as a national holiday in 1972. We learned from you that was Richard Nixon.
Yeah, Lyndon Johnson signed some sort of a proclamation about it, but President Nixon finalized it.
And then we learned this together, that the official flower of Father's Day, red roses.
Yeah, that was a new one on me. I didn't know that.
I had never, ever in my life heard that. A red rose that you would wear on your lapel for a father if he was living, and a white rose to celebrate the memory of your father if they had passed. All right, I have a couple history questions for you. Are you game?
Sure.
Anybody can jump in. Charlie, if you know this, Eli, Caitlin, Gajavich. That wasn't even close.
No.
Gajavich?
I think that was great.
Oh, okay. I don't know. Which U.S. president fathered the most children? Does anybody know? A little Father's Day trivia for you. I didn't think so.
The most children?
Yep. Which U.S. president fathered the most children? And I'll give you a hint. I didn't even know this guy was a president. That's how unfamiliar I was with this name. John Tyler.
Oh, Tyler. Way back in the 19th century.
I was going to say Fillmore.
Yeah.
Classic me.
Millard.
You know it.
John Tyler had 15 children.
Wow.
Good golly.
Happy Father's
Day. Yeah. I don't, what number president was John Tyler? And
ten or eleven. Yeah, 10, 12. Yeah.
I know, first, 16th, current. No, yeah, I know a few more.
Tyler was the 10th.
Okay,
Tyler was the 10th.
I guess I did know the name.
There was a whole stretch of presidents there that are kind of obscure these days. After like John Adams and Thomas Jefferson, and then John Quincy Adams, John Adams' son, was president. And then after that, there was, you know, they came and went, and then we get the Civil War. Everybody knows Abraham Lincoln.
Yes, so, 16th president, yeah. I believe.
Yes, that is right.
All right. Well, you just answered, this is a two-part or a two-answer question, and you just answered one of them. There have been two father-son duos who served as U.S. presidents. Who were they?
That John Adams and John Quincy Adams, and George H.W. Bush and George W. Bush.
W.
In our own time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
W.
W.
Yeah, you're great at history. You really are.
You always learn something new. But I do love stuff like this, yes.
Every time I'm on the air, I try to learn something new, and I try to make a difference. Those are really my only two goals for being
on
the air.
That's a great goal. No, those are great goals. They really are.
Yeah. So here's another one. Which five U.S. presidents were not fathers?
James Buchanan, was one.
Yeah.
George Washington.
Yeah.
George Washington was not a biological father. That is true. That's two.
Three more.
Oh.
You want initials?
Yeah.
J.M.
Monroe?
No. Nope. The other M.
Oh, Madison.
Mm-hmm. James Madison.
Madison, right. Okay.
A.J.
Andrew Jackson.
Mm-hmm. And J.P. And not Jared Payton, because he's a dad. Two times over.
Pierce?
Nope.
James
Polk?
Yep.
Oh, Polk.
James Polk.
Yeah,
so,
right. Franklin Pierce was the president. Yeah.
Five U.S. presidents that were not fathers on this Father's Day. George Washington, James Madison, Andrew Jackson, James Polk, and James Buchanan. And then this is interesting. What's the average age of a first-time dad in the U.S.? Although this study was published a while ago in 2017, and I bet it's younger now. This is interesting.
Average age, 25?
First-time dad in the U.S. They're saying, this is from Good Housekeeping. They're not so good, because this is published in 2017, but 30.9 years old. So just about 31 years old is the average age of a first-time dad in the U.S. I bet it's younger now, because I feel like I'm seeing...
You think it's younger?
Yeah, it's weird. It's like people got married, you know, in their teens and very early 20s many, many years ago, and then women waited a while. I had to wait because it was really hard for me to find a guy who had a job and a car at the same time. Kidding. But I wanted to get my career off the ground first.
Sure,
so I was 34-ish, I think. And now I feel like I'm hearing of people like mid to late 20s getting married.
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah, that's right. But 30, I was going to say between 25 and 30. Although my closest friends that are fathers were around 30 at the time they had their first children.
Oh.
You know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it stands to reason.
Yeah, I guess that's about it. Because you do, I mean, I really wanted to get my career off the ground first. And this August will be 40 years that I've been on the radio here in Chicago. I was thinking about that. I got to try and find my on-air audition.
What are we doing audition, to celebrate the anniversary?
Bible tapes. We have to celebrate.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll celebrate. I got to find that air check. Again, I guess I was smoking then. I don't smoke now, but I did. My voice was a little higher than it is now.
Thanks to Juicy Fruit.
Exactly. And if you weren't listening, I believe the show, you can find it at WGNradio.com. You should listen on Sundays. And finally, who holds the Guinness Book of World Record or the Guinness World Record for the oldest legal father? No one would know this, and no, it's not Tony Randall, who I believe had children. Actor Tony Randall from The Odd Couple had children. I think his last child, he was 82 years old.
What?
Yeah, I'm pretty positive. You can double check my facts there, but according to the Guinness World Records, World Record, Les Colley had a son. When Les Colley was 92 years old and 10 months. So he was almost 93 and he had a son. And then they shared diapers. All right, Shwani, here's your news on 720 WGN. Happy Father's Day to all you listeners out there and to Jimmy Mack. He's a great father to our two boys, Michael and Dylan. I'm Wendy Snyder. Ron Brown joins us to a little movie talk. Hi, Ron.
Hi, Wendy.
I actually went to a movie as was foreshadowed last weekend.
That's right. And what is your review?
I went to see... What's it called? Disclosure Day?
Disclosure Day, yeah.
Spielberg's new movie.
Yes.
I truly enjoyed it.
Oh, well, good, good.
I know you and Eli even thought I may not enjoy it. It was not very much like E.T.
Right.
And you did mention a kind of a action chase scene kind of thing, but I really like Aliens. Mm-hmm. I really feel like Aliens would be different towards us now and technology than were the days of E.T. So I think it felt like it was accurate in what would happen today if there was alien life.
Well, E.T. was a nice little guy. You know,
yeah.
He liked the kids, and he helped the kids, and he was a friendly alien.
He was. That was a sweet movie, and it wasn't really about aliens as much as it was about cover-ups.
Right.
And I thought it was really good.
Yeah, there was a lot of things that I liked about it. I didn't like, for me, the logical side of my brain would just go, well, how did that happen? And why did that happen? And why didn't they do this? And why didn't they do that? And then especially without giving too much away, the ending, I was like, that could never happen, you know, and it wasn't so much about the aliens. It's what the people were doing.
Yeah.
So, but there was a lot of good things. It was a wonderfully acted movie. It was wonderfully shot and lit. And there were a lot of good things about it. The action scenes were kind of, you know, really, they would have been, you know, they would have fit in a James Bond
movie.
Yeah,
they were exhilarating.
Yeah. So all of that was good. It was just those connecting dots that for me were the problem, but I still, you know, recommended it, you know.
Yeah.
You know, people should see it and draw their own conclusions, and you had more of an emotional reaction to it than I did.
Yeah, although my husband Jim was getting annoyed because I'm like, that's Bono's daughter, isn't she good? Oh, that's Kurt Russell's son. Yeah. Isn't he good?
Yeah.
But yeah, I enjoyed it, he enjoyed it, and I'm sure while I was seeing that, Stand By Me was going on at the Chicago Theater, was it?
It was the 40th anniversary of Stand By Me was going on with the stars, and that's Corey Feldman and Will Wheaton, and also who's the other guy in there? Jerry O'Connell.
Yes.
Was there. They had a great time. The audience had a great time. It's a great movie. And then Corey Feldman gets on the plane to go home, and then he did not feel so well. So
I saw that story. I didn't realize he was coming home from Chicago.
Right from Chicago to L.A. Yeah, it was a health scare. And he had to be taken to the hospital. Paramedics were waiting for him on the ground in L.A., took him to the hospital right away. And they're thinking that maybe it was gallstones because he was in such bad pain. But his publicist confirmed that the health scare was severe food poisoning.
Oh, no.
That's not good. That's not good. So I had to ask. I didn't see this in any stories, but I'm asking, okay, well, he didn't get it on the plane. Well, the last place he ate was Chicago. So did he have any deep dish pizza?
Oh, no.
I don't know. He had to have eaten somewhere in Chicago, and it was the last place he was before he got on the plane. So couldn't be Italian beef or hot dogs because Corey's a vegetarian. But he had some severe food poisoning after leaving Chicago.
That is crazy.
Yeah, but he's feeling better now, and he's got a single to promote as well. So,
yeah, I was just going to say, how's his band doing?
Yeah, so, well, I'll let you tell me because I don't have any plans on seeing that.
Yeah, I'm not going to go
or listening to that. I've seen samples, and, you know, God bless Corey Feldman and his career and whatever he wants to do, but I'm not on the journey with him.
Yeah, yeah. I don't blame you.
Yeah.
I had a girlfriend who texted me, and it was a group from all our friends. Anyone want to go see Toy Story 5? And I'm like, I think I didn't see 3 or 4, so do I need to see 3 or 4 before 5? Because I did love the Toy Story movies.
I haven't seen 5 yet. It's on my to-do list. But it had a really big opening weekend. And like you, I didn't see 4. I didn't see 3, and that's being hailed as like
yes,
one of the greatest Pixar movies of all time. So I am going to go back and watch Toy Story 3 and maybe 4 because Toy Story 5 is getting some great reviews. It's open to a huge box office. I don't usually cover box office because I think it's like a financial story.
Mm-hmm.
It's irrelevant to how good or how bad a movie is. But in this case, it opened up for a record for the franchise, $152 million globally, $312 million. And that's a record for the franchise. So
jeez,
it's big. It's about the toys realizing that they're getting outdated and the kids nowadays need tech toys.
Uh-huh.
And how tech toys aren't as good for the imagination as the old toys are, and they maybe distance you from, you know, having friends that are real as opposed to AI or technology based. So there's that story. So that's, you know, not deep, but it's certainly something to contemplate when you're talking about a Pixar story. So I do. Yeah. I want to see it.
I do too. And I like you, will be seeing 3 and 4. I feel like I should do that. And I really want to see it because I heard Conan O'Brien plays a toilet training toy.
Right there. You got me right there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Joan Cusack is the,
Jesse.
Yeah, Jesse. So she's more the star in this movie. But yeah, Conan O'Brien is a potty training toy.
That is so perfect.
It
is
just
it
writes
not?
Itself, yeah.
I love him.
Yeah.
A Sesame Street movie in the works, huh?
A new one. This is the third. I didn't realize this, that there have been two before, so I'm out of the Sesame Street loop for a while. But it's coming out on Netflix. Netflix is where Sesame Street lives now, that it's no longer with PBS. So in this new movie, it follows Big Bird and his friends after they are thrown out of their neighborhood and they end up in Manhattan. So it kind of sounds like art imitating life. they're looking for a new home, or they're thrown out of their old home and they're wind up in New York, and they're trying to convince everybody that the Sesame Street really does exist. So it's a live action movie. The other two previous, I had their names written down here, but I don't see them right now. But there were two other before then. Oh, Follow That Bird in 1985 and The Adventures of Elmo in Grouchland in 1999. I'm not familiar with either of those, but it's Sesame Street and it's Sesame Street characters. You really can't mess that up, I don't think. So
No. If
you have kids or you have grandkids or if you have nieces or nephews, it's a Sesame Street movie, so I just think it has to be good. The no release date has been released for that, but that is also something to put on your calendar of things to do with the kids.
And there will be a new Shrek movie too, huh?
Shrek 5, yeah. That's Jeez. Like it's like printing money, you know. Do you want to do another one? Yes, I say yes. Everybody, you'll raise your hand if you want to make more money. So, but Shrek 5, it's been consistently good. I mean, those are great characters. Shrek, Fiona, and Donkey, and they all return.
Donkey.
Yeah, Donkey. That was a good one. So are the stars returning? Mike Myers, Eddie Murphy, Cameron Diaz, and they're going to have children. Fergus and Farkey, and Felicia, and Zendaya.
I am Felicia Middlebrooks. Thank you very much.
You should have tried out for the role.
Thank you.
Zendaya, you could have been the porpoise. You know, the porpoise in the pond there. See?
Yes.
There you go. There it never
I'm very
fails.
Talented people. You didn't know this.
It never fails. Well, Zendaya is going to be playing Felicia. Someone named Marcelo Hernandez is Fergus, and Skylar Gisondo will be Farkel.
Okay, Marcelo Hernandez is from SNL, and I find him to be so funny.
Oh, that's right.
Yes.
Okay, I didn't recognize the name. Thank you.
It rang a bell, and then Eli kind of tipped it in for me.
All right. Way to go, Eli. Two for Eli. That will be released in June of 2027, so next year.
All right. And happy Father's Day, Ron Brown.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I've already spoken to one of my children who's called, and the other is mailing me a little package, and he'll probably be calling me a little later on today. So
excellent.
And if he's listening to this, call. Will you call? Just call. I'm waiting.
I was talking to Alex Zalbin earlier about TV, and I asked him if he had a favorite Father's Day movie, and he mentioned the movie Frequency with Dennis Quaid.
Yeah.
I never heard of it.
Yeah,
Steve Dale, you haven't either?
No idea. No.
Ron, I knew you
yeah,
would.
I've seen it. Yeah,
is it a good movie?
It is, yeah. It's a good movie. It may be Dennis Quaid's best movie, but that's not saying a whole lot.
Yeah. And
Whoa.
It's about a father-son relationship, or what, does it have to do with fathers?
Oh, it sure does, yeah. He's speaking, well, I don't know if I'm giving away too much of the plot, but yeah, it's a father and a son, and they're speaking to each other through time travel kind of thing, and they don't realize it. So it's, you know, before Interstellar. Interstellar is kind of like a Father's Day movie as well, when you think about it. But I had a favorite Father's Day movie called Tree Grows in Brooklyn.
I've heard of it. I didn't see it.
No idea. Who's in that one? Beside the oak tree.
I can't think of the stars' names. I guess it's like from the 40s, 45. It's Elia Kazan's, one of his first movies. And it's just a sweet movie about a little girl. And her relationship with her father is kind of like more like a subplot. It's more about her. But he's just the sweetest hard luck guy. He's a singing waiter, and he's trying to make money, and he's trying to do things. But he has an alcohol problem, and that kind of derails him. But she forgives him, and she's just so sweet. And the mom is hardworking, and the mom is not as forgiving as you can say. But it all ties together, and it just made me, you know, I don't know, a little tear in my eye if I'm going
Dorothy
to
McGuire.
Dorothy McGuire, she was the star,
James Dunn, Joan Blondell was also in there.
One of my favorites.
She was the sister,
All right, well, cool. All right, well, I hope your other kid calls you.
Oh, he will. He will, or I'll call him.
All right.
If not, Ron, I'm happy to call you.
Steal the surrogate son, okay? Or sure. Steve the surrogate son, okay? All right, we'll have that conversation off air then.
All right, Ron, have a good one.
All right, I will. Thank you, and I'm happy that you liked Disclosure Day.
Yeah, I thought it was really good, and I hadn't been to a movie in a while, and I'll tell you, it was really nice being in a movie theater.
Make it a habit. It's a good habit.
I should. All right, we'll check in with Steve Dale next here on 720 WGN.
Doesn't sound like NSYNC.
No, it isn't. This is a great song.
It is, but not NSYNC.
But I can't remember the name of it. Mama told me. Skynyrd.
Yeah.
Simple Man.
Simple Man. Damn. Yeah. I couldn't think of it.
Can you still voice over the beginning of those songs, any song?
Yeah. Yes.
Like, same here. I mean, it's like ingrained in you, I think.
Yes, from listening to the radio when we were growing
up. And doing it.
Yeah.
At one point in your career, you did this. So I mention NSYNC, though, for a reason.
Because you're a president of their fan club, Steve Dale?
Now I am, because Joey Fatone turns out to be the nicest guy ever.
Really?
Yeah. So we're talking to Joey toward the top of the show at about 1:15. He is coming to Chicago, NSYNC fans. For And Juliet, he plays one of the lead roles in that show, which is so much fun. And he sings, I think, we have to ask him about this, but I think he sings a Backstreet Boys song in the show.
Oh, really?
And the other thing I will ask him about, there's a rumor out there, the biggest showbiz rumor ever, that the Backstreet Boys and NSYNC will get together and perform together in somewhere like Vegas.
Really?
Yeah. So it's just a rumor. I'm going to talk to him about it.
That's pretty interesting.
If anyone can confirm that rumor, it would be him. By the way, I'm so jealous of you.
Why?
You talk about the interviews I get. You did the most important interview in the history of WGN radio like 30 minutes ago. You talked to the organizer of a tequila fest.
Oh.
That's important.
You're mocking me.
No, I'm not. I'm serious.
You're mocking me.
No, I am not. I want to go to this thing.
Yeah, tacos and tequila.
How can... yes. Very, very important. Okay, so also on the show, as I digress.
Yeah.
I have so much fun talking to you.
I'm glad you do.
I totally knew you were going to say that.
I know. You do know me well.
Yes.
Which, by the way, Joey Fatone is very gray and looks really good. He's 49 years old. I mean, we're not getting any younger, but he looks great.
He plays a dad in this show.
He looks really
handsome. And Juliet, if you don't know the show, it's so much fun. It's the Romeo and Juliet story, except it stops where Juliet's about to kill herself.
Oh.
And instead...
Spoiler alert!
Well, I think I could say this. And instead she goes on and has a romance with somebody else.
I like that.
And the dad of the guy she's having a romance with is played by Joey Fatone. Speaking of great theater, E. Faye Butler, whose name you may or may not know, has won countless, I don't know how many, six, seven, eight... Jefferson Awards, which is the big award for Chicago theater. She is now directing a show called Nonsense that's appearing at the Drury Lane Oakbrook. The first date I had with my wife about 40 years ago was to see the show.
I saw Nonsense somewhere long ago.
I think
it was
everyone
great.
Has.
Yeah.
It's a...
That was your first date?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll talk to E. Faye Butler about that and about all sorts of other things and what she is doing today. The hottest topic I will be talking about on the show, soccer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
FIFA.
Yep, yep. So you just like saying it.
I know, I do.
I know. So the book is called Surviving Soccer, and this is the author of that book who writes about what it's like to be a soccer mom.
Oh,
and
like a legitimate soccer mom, not just, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And when your kid gets hurt, how you feel when the other parents mock your son who's playing soccer, all those things that really do happen, right? And she writes about pickle juice. I'm not quite sure why, but we'll find out. Pickle juice has some sort of magic.
Yeah. It's I've known people to drink it before certain things.
Yeah, before like marathons.
But I don't know why, really, so we'll find out.
Exactly.
All right, can I ask you a little Brady Bunch trivia question? Because we were throughout the day, you can go to WGNradio.com and vote on your favorite TV dad and register to win a gift certificate. You didn't?
No, but you're doing it.
Yes, we are doing
it. Who's your favorite TV dad?
I don't know. I mean, there's so many that I can't decide. I really can't. Mr. Cunningham was a great dad from
Happy Days.
Yes.
Yeah.
But you can register to win a gift certificate to Schaefer's Greenhouses.
Oh, that's right up your alley.
We were talking about, and through tonight you can do it. We were talking about the Brady Bunch, and Mr. Mike Brady was a good dad, in my opinion, and he was a widower, and I had mentioned that Carol lost her husband as well. A listener texted me and said, no, Carol was divorced, so I had to look that up. Which do you think it was, a widow or divorcee?
Divorce.
Well, you're kind of right. The original creator, Sherwood Schwartz, who you've probably talked to.
Yeah, Gilligan's Island and all these shows. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He wanted Carol to be a divorcee, but the network believed divorce was too controversial back in 1969.
And actually, the first divorcee on TV.
Oh, who was
it? Oh, you're not going to guess this. It's something I would know.
Yeah, it was B. Arthur as Maude.
No, no.
God'll get you for that old. Who was it? Oh, darn
Way
it.
Way before that. It was about 1963 or 4.
I forgot, but I did know
yeah,
this.
Yeah, you won't get this. It was Vivian Vance, who played a character, Vivian Bagley, on The Lucy Show. When Lucy came back after doing the Lucy Desi Comedy Hour, then going to Broadway, in the meantime divorcing Desi, came back with Vivian Vance. So Vivian Vance demanded that her character be named Vivian.
Oh, yeah.
She wanted something that was very different than Ethel Mertz. But in addition to that, she played a divorcee. And at that time, that was unheard of.
Yes, I do remember that. And is that when the banker was there? What was
his name? Mr. Mooney.
Yes, yes. See, I do remember
you
this.
Do, yeah.
All right, I have to go. You have to start your show.
Oh, we can't talk more about Mr. Mooney?
We'll do that next time.
Okay.
And Ron Brown has your news coming up from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Happy Father's Day to all. And I'm back tomorrow morning for Surratt here on 720 WGN.